So last night I did a lot of talking and didn't give anyone else a chance to ask questions or clarify any doubts or any gaps in one's understanding that might or might not have anything to do with those teachings. But because some of you are only here for a few days, I want to make sure that you get all of your questions answered while you're here. And so I'd like to devote this evening to simply being available to offer answers to anyone, especially those who are here for a short retreat. But whoever has questions, they always apply to everyone, so don't feel shy or think you should wait until others have gone if something arises in your heart that you feel a need to understand more deeply. So the floor is open. I think we'll use that mic, yeah? And whoever has a question, don't be shy. You can go there, and Hanuman will make sure the mic fits exactly your height. Don't all rush up at once. And we can sit in blissful silence also.
Hello. Is that really a question, but more of a comment? Well, I've been here. I've just been in the lounge area reading on Sri Ramana's books there, and it has a lot to say about self-inquiry. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like emphasizing that's like a main thing to catch the ego mind, is being a witness of how your mind is working through its thoughts. You think, is that like the main thing to go for? Self-inquiry, like introspection?
Well, if you read carefully how he describes that practice, he's not interested in the ego at all. What he's interested in is that you find out who is aware of their ego as a mental object and a program that arises autonomously in the mind, and to realize directly, oh, I am not that ego. It's just a set of algorithms, and those thoughts are coming up by themselves. And most of those thoughts I already can see are false and have nothing to do with the real. In fact, that the ego is clueless and has only its own proclivities and projections to offer, but nothing of value. And so once that is realized, I am not the ego and not the body that the ego mind identifies with, then who am I? What is I? What does the word I even mean? And then that begins the real self-inquiry. So first is the neti-neti. I'm not that ego. I'm not the body. I'm not its emotions. I'm not its behavior. I'm none of that. What am I?
Yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly what I was thinking while I was reading it too. So yeah, I'm not this thoughts that are coming and going, and I'm not going to attach to its creation of emotions or this or that, and I'm not going to identify. I'm going to disidentify less and less with this character, and through this self-inquiry of just witnessing how that apparatus is working.
Right, but you have to get one very, very, let's say, core understanding very clear, and that is the ego is made of language. And so to become free of the ego, you must become free of language. So you can't think your way out of it. You can't think, oh, I'm not that, I'm not that. It's not about thinking the truth, because the truth is beyond thought. And so one enters a state of silent presence. And then in that silence, the energy and the beauty, the light, all of that begins to appear. And the freedom from ego consciousness becomes your true state. And that's when you can be free of it permanently, not just momentarily.
Okay, but when you say permanently, is that meaning like the apparatus itself, will, it's not going to cease from creating thoughts, they're going to be created, but you won't need to think that, oh, these are not my thoughts, you just let them go.
Let's put it this way. The ability to think will not be lost, but the tendencies of thought that the ego has can be deleted, because it's only a program. And when you no longer buy into its thoughts and its desires, right? Because most of its thoughts are about what do I want, right?
Yeah, it's like a lack, and you want to do something. It's an act. It's trying to create an activity for you.
That's right. And so then you shift from a sense of lack to the fullness, and from doing to being, and from noise to silence. And then it's in that silence then that the ego mind will receive information, insight, inspiration, creative genius from the self, but it will work spontaneously without any identification with its activity.
Correct. And in this way, you're moving with the flow of the Tao. You're not...
That's correct.
Like your actions, you're not activity. You're just acting to whatever needs to be done at that moment.
Yes, and there's actually no you at all. The Tao itself. Yeah. The flow is what you are.
That's amazing. Okay, thank you so much.
Hi. I've been meditating a lot about the nature of evil, maybe not so much the mystery. It doesn't. And the shadow and the power that it has. And I'm wondering, it has so much force or life force or potential, but it comes out in very destructive ways. I wonder how to turn it around and be able to contain and utilize that force without it being destructive.
Mm-hmm. A very important question for everyone, really. What I would say in answer is that the ego itself, in its postmodern form, not in its earlier, let's say, more sattvic form in the ancient world, but as the ego is manufactured today in the current social systems, it is based on the foreclosure of your divine nature. Okay? In other words, your divine self is not just repressed, but foreclosure means it's rejected completely and out of the picture. And so it usurps the life energy of the soul. It takes it and uses it. It doesn't have any energy of its own because a shadow doesn't really exist, right? It's an illusory set of concepts, but that are based on a feeling of lack and entitlement and of urgency, of need for jouissance as fuel, and the fuel that it lives on and without which it will die is anger, desire and gratification of the sensory level of the bodily vehicle, and a sense of safety and security, right? The first three chakras, basically. And so its intention is to get as much of that fuel as possible and project into every situation an opportunity to use those drives of aggression and domination and of control and of possessiveness to fulfill those ego needs, right? And so that's really the core of what evil is. And it's based on a complete lack of essence that therefore requires continual refueling, because otherwise it just falls into lack, into a void, and it can't tolerate that. It always has to create a sense of power because it is powerless. And because it is a parasite upon the soul, and has taken advantage of the fact that the soul is asleep to take over in the absence of a legitimate government of one's own consciousness. And so that illegitimacy of authority that the ego has, because if it admitted it would produce a sense of guilt, it has to project that out on the other and justify its fury so that it can believe that its anger is righteous and that it is always justified in how it reacts to situations, right? So as it says in the Bible, the Torah, the original sin is the eating of the tree of the belief that you know good and evil. It's that ability to say, I am the judge of what is good and evil. Not God, not the soul, but I, the ego, right? And so if you want to defeat that, you have to recognize that you do not have the authority to make such a judgment. And then the soul itself must awaken to the fact that a demonic nature has taken over its own essence, its own being, and is using it against its own welfare and against the service of God, and is causing an ever deeper rift and alienation between the soul and God as its mother, father, and ultimately itself, its own essence. And once that realization comes, one must be supremely vigilant to make sure that the ego cannot backlash and censor that understanding and again perform its sleight of hand to convince you that, no, I'm justified in behaving that way and in a fight or flight mode of being and in rejecting this one and that one, etc. And so you have to be aware that that's the game the ego will play, and it has a lot of power to convince you because it can censor information, it can repress memory and even the ability to think clearly. And it can put one into an anger trance very easily. And then when one wakes up, it's too late. One created a huge glitch, etc. And then that brings one even deeper under its control because its sanskaras have succeeded. So every time it defeats the soul that is attempting to awaken, it gets stronger and the soul feels more hopeless. So the only way the soul can get out of this is, first of all, total humility and willingness to surrender its consciousness completely to the service of God, and literally to take refuge in the presence of God, to take over one's willpower, so that one doesn't act or react or speak from the ego level, but is willing to abide in the witness position until the wisdom of the self has been downloaded and one can respond from a place of love, compassion, and recognition that the other is also a manifestation of God, and this is a play that is being enacted in order for you to grow through these recognitions at ever higher and more subtle levels. And then staying in that flow of information and will, of the ability then to slay the ego by not allowing it to entertain its thoughts and activate its potencies in terms of speech and behavior, it weakens. And the longer you go without letting it act out and betray your soul, the more the soul is able to take over the mind and stop those kinds of thought patterns from emerging altogether, and then burning them in the fire of yoga by sitting for a long period in total silence and not allowing a single thought to arise until you have reached that state of total stillness in which there is unification with the Absolute Self. And then that becomes the operating system, and there is no longer duality, no judgment, no emotionality, and no identification as a person any longer. The person is simply a character in the matrix, but has no special relationship to what you are.
Thank you. When you said, I just impacted by the sort of radical humility that is necessary. When you said about, you know, I don't have the right to judge in the ego, that's when so much fear comes up. And that's, I think, why it keeps being censored. That's the point. That's the key. That's
fear of what?
Everything, like being killed, overwhelmed, invaded, destroyed, seen to be unworthy, stupid.
But see, these are the ego's own narratives. It uses those thoughts to create fear so that your soul will acquiesce in giving its power away to the ego. That's its trick. Yeah. And so you have to laugh at the fear. You have to realize this is a comedy play. It's not a tragedy. And don't be the tragic, flawed, you know, hero who turns out to be the villain. And you don't want to be Macbeth in this presentation, right? There are other characters that are much nicer to play, including being an avatar of the God Self, right? So don't settle for believing in fear. Because the only thing you have to fear, as someone else said long ago, is fear itself. And fear is always an illusion, as is death, as is suffering, because it only happens within the matrix of this dream field. And so you have to be in the silence long enough to realize this is a dream, and you are the dreamer, not a character who's in the dream. You will become lucid as the dreamer of the dream, and then you make the character into a model example of the dreamer's consciousness awakened to awaken others to that same realization. And that becomes the modus operandi of your life, to be an awakener, not through master's discourse, but through simply shining with the light of that blissful power of divine love and fearlessness. And that is the fulfillment of life. And then you're free.
Haji, thank you.
Thank you for the question, and I appreciate your courage and determination to gain victory.
Thank you.
And you shall.
So it's a question about last night's teaching, where you mentioned that one can take one of either of two paths, one being the path of jnana and silencing the mind, and the other being the surrender of the heart. And how I kind of took that was, or part of me took it, was, oh, okay, if I just surrender the heart, I don't need to silence the mind. But is that true?
And no.
No.
Of course not.
So they come together in the end anyways, is, I guess, the question.
Well, what you discover when you surrender your heart to God is that the heart is the source of wisdom, not the mind. Hmm. And the heart realizes that it is the legitimate authority, not the mind. All the mind can do is calculate. It cannot really have an accurate understanding of the dharmic accuracy of any action or thought or word spoken or the meaning even of any event. It is the heart, when it's opened and in accord with the will of God, that then enlightens the mind. Hmm. The light goes from the heart to the mind, in fact. So this is why jnana itself is bhakti. You cannot actually separate them. There are people who are much more in the beginning, devotees and others who are philosophers, let's say, and want to think all of this out. But at a certain point, they meet, and you cannot escape the unification of mind and heart, because that is what grants transcendence of the ego that keeps the two separate. And that's how why the ego can be psychopathic. Because it can repress its own heart, its own sense of goodness, its own feeling that there are any ethical demands or obligations or any sense of loyalty to God and to truth, etc. And so the unification of mind with the heart open to the real. Not the heart closed with defenses around it, that is, has sentiments and desires, but not the reality of love, right? Which is surrender and is freedom from judgment and is total acceptance.
Thank you, because I've been meditating and contemplating this a lot, this point of dropping the ego defenses completely. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that as soon as there's more silence, it's almost as if in that silence there's more of a beckoning of the heart to open. Mm-hmm. And immediately I notice that that's then where the battle is. It's like I want mm-hmm. to be in more silence, but then the heart starts more opening, and it's more that I'm afraid of the heart mm-hmm. opening mm-hmm. rather than the silence.
Yeah, of course. Sure, because then the game is up for the ego, because the ego mm-hmm. is the refusal to love. It's like what I told Nirgun. Mm-hmm. Don't believe that fear that you'll be taken advantage of, exploited, whatever, if you don't have your defenses and your ability to be aggressive and stand your ground against the other and all of that. So there's a way in which the ego will convince you that you shouldn't open your heart mm-hmm. because you'll be vulnerable and hurt again, mm-hmm. and you don't want to be hurt, right? But when you really open your heart to God, you become immune to all hurt, mm-hmm. okay? But only when you are also immune to your ego and its narratives. That's the real danger, is the ego's false thoughts that cause you to then reject growth and reject your own divine nature, and then stay in a fearful and angry state that acts from that level of duality and of egocentricity, okay? And because today, every ego has been inadequately raised with not a sufficient amount of attention and love, and therefore there's a series of downward escalating disorders, from attention disorder and learning difficulties, which are all refusals. They're anger at the system. I refuse to learn. I'm not going to pay attention. They didn't pay attention to me. And all the way down to autism and psychopathic behavior. They weren't good to me. Why do I need to be good to anyone? I'm just going to go for what I can get out of it and stab anyone in the back that I need to along the way. Or all the way into psychosis, where I reject even rationality and sense. I'll live in my delirium. I don't need the world's common sense because it's all nonsense anyway, and a total rejection of the ego's capacity to think at all. And all of that happens out of hatred and rejection and foreclosure of the soul's true nature. So you don't want to fall into that, because once you fall, even at a minor level, you're captured by the lower death drive that wants to take you all the way down. And you shouldn't underestimate its power, and you should be very clearly able to discern that those narratives of the ego that make one feel more nihilistic and antagonistic and alienated, those are all trying to get you down into the deepest hell realm that it can take you. And you don't want to be imprisoned by its power. Okay, so mm-hmm. only opening the heart will give you the power of love that can reject its rejection of life, of goodness, of the eternal beauty of what you are and of the nature of creation itself. Hmm.
And is it then the power of love that gives one the strength to stay in silence?
Yes, but it has to be the purest love of the source of your being. And you have to lose all interest in what's happening in the phenomenal plane in order to connect to the real. And then you are able to give that blissful love to everyone unconditionally, without judgments of they're worthy of my love, this one isn't. Because love that is finite is not real love. Love by its nature is infinite. And it does not reject. Okay?
Thank you. I'm going to take that to heart.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you, Shri. These have been incredible answers. to both Nirgun and Karuna, and I found them very helpful. I can relate to the questions and to the answers, and this feeling at the core, this foreclosure of myself and knowing who I am and the divine, not having the right to judge. What stood out the most in what I was just sitting there pondering was the ego refuses love and refuses to love. And I was very impacted when you said, and we've said it often, but you just said it to Nirgun, it stood out, take refuge in the presence. And I was, it's interesting, these two words are so close to refuse and refuge. Mm-hmm. And it was, oh, it's right there. There's always this refusal, but what one's never experienced is taking refuge. What is taking refuge? What is to feel, yeah, to let go of all the refusing? But anyway, mm-hmm. am I making any sense?
Well, haven't you taken refuge in the ashram?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what has that meant to you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've taken refuge in an environment that is relatively benign and benevolent in terms of the energy field and the desire for you to rise to your true nature and to open your heart to love, etc. And you realize that this was a much better environment to grow in than the others that you had experienced, which were more traumatic, right? So, in that state, doesn't there come up a very natural sense of gratitude? Okay, now multiply that 1,000 times for having gratitude for realizing that you are actually one with God and have never been separate from the God self, and that you were sent here as an angel to bring the light into the darkness of the world through the wisdom you gain by overcoming your own ego's shadow and using that wisdom to enable you to be a healing catalyst for other beings who are on the same journey. That's the becoming a refugee, and then you become a citizen of the place you've taken refuge, which is the kingdom of heaven in this case.
Beautiful. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thank you.
I have a question about mistakes and why they're called mistakes, really. I had a situation this week where I think I learned a very valuable lesson from a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about, like, I felt I dealt with it in a very transparent way, which kind of makes it not really a mistake. But I wonder how to get the most out of mistakes.
Well, again, I think what you said in the beginning is right. There really is no such thing as a mistake. It's a mistake to believe in mistakes, right? Because the only way anyone learns is through error, and then the correcting of that error, and then making another error in the other direction and correcting it, right? It's like tacking in a sailboat.
Yeah.
You get better and better at it and more accurate. But these mistakes of what is happening and what one should do is what increases our wisdom. But we have to be willing to learn from it. Mm-hmm. The problem with the ego is it makes deliberate mistakes. Mm-hmm. It deliberate glitches, deliberate problems for others, out of its anger and rejection and refusal to grow and wanting others to suffer the way I suffered. The ego has that, at least in the subconscious shadow, that can often erupt involuntarily, and you discovered that what you thought was just a mere mistake was actually a sabotage because there was an intention underlying it. That's what has to be uncovered, mm-hmm. right? That's where the Jekyll and Hyde kind of situation arises. And every ego today is a Jekyll and Hyde, okay? Some will try to hide the Hyde, but it always comes out in some way until it has been defeated. The question of discerning between an innocent mistake that will enable you to grow and a pattern of, let's say, sabotaging the harmony of a situation or getting angry when it's not really needed to get angry, it's not a simple mistake. It's a decision to fuel the enjoyment of that aggression or that sense of revenge or whatever it was. It's uncovering any of those motivations that are below the surface, but that may be pushing the ego into patterns of making the same mistake over and over again that really has to be released.
It's interesting when you said a mistake. It's like we're in a play and we're practicing the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And
take one.
Sometimes you have to, take, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's there's something very innocent about that because it's play. You're trying mm-hmm. to figure it out. It's like the performativity paradox mm-hmm. aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I experienced this week was, I wrote to you straight away with the situation that I was in.
Yeah.
But there's also in the mind kind of relating to an other because... let's say my perceived other doesn't have enough information, and if they see the mistake, it creates hysteria and all of these kinds of things. So is that whole thought process more of like a super ego that is active,
yeah.
or is there ever any kind of rationalization for actually not, like if I'm transparent with you, but I don't want other people to see the mistake because I think that it just creates hysteria. Is that an inaccurate?
Yeah, I think that's a mistake.
That's a mistake. Yeah,
you shouldn't care what the other thinks.
Right.
And I didn't think you made a mistake at all, okay?
Uh-huh. Right.
You got bad information,
right.
But you acted on it in good faith, and anyone would have done that in your situation who hadn't already made that mistake, at least, and gone through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you shouldn't have the narrative, oh, I did something wrong, right? So the mistake was at another level of the capitalist system that was making an offer of something that shouldn't have been on the market in the first place. So I won't go into all the details here, but the point is that we're in a situation today where the entire environment, both the economy and the poisoned natural environment, are all productive of bad effects and of collateral damage because they're all based on false ideas of chemistry and virology and all the other pseudosciences that we were taught we should trust, that we should mistrust very seriously. Right. That's the mistake, was trusting naively. And hopefully everyone has grown out of that one.
Right.
But the real issue is then how do you trust? How do you discern legitimate authority that has my best interests at heart from those who say they do, but really they want to commit genocide, you know? And today we're in a situation where governments themselves are the anarchies, and they're acting completely illegitimately and fomenting the destruction and extinction of life on the planet, literally. That's where we are. And so to be in that situation, which is going to produce all kind of collateral mistakes, right, which often means oops, death, right, that was offered by supposed medications, etc. And we have to be very careful to discern the intentions of those we are dealing with, and even the unintentional dependency on false beliefs that are claimed to be scientific or based on experience when in fact they are not. And so this issue of accurate information versus disinformation and the media's attempt to mind control us all, which is actually very successful and makes use of our mimetic tendency to imitate the herd, that's the mistake that we have to no longer make and really attain individuation at the level of soul and then pure spirit.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I think kind of the more underlying message that I got from this situation is it's important not to pursue a piece of information as though it's true just because it makes things easy.
Yes.
And it's this idea of comfort, which I know Catherine Austin Fitz talks about a lot.
Yeah.
It's where we can't tolerate any discomfort at all, and we're actually willing just to completely give up our intelligence in order just to have an easy kind of mm-hmm. outlet.
Yeah, so that's true. Most people have given up thinking, and all they are interested in is images, and quick fixes, and a sense of certainty without any kind of research or due diligence or real deep thought. And most people's capacity to think clearly has atrophied, and they are not able to do it. So there really has to be a re-education of those who want to grow spiritually, because we've been indoctrinated with nihilism and atheism, and most people can't overcome that on their own. Mm-hmm. So again, going back to the other question of humility, we have to be humble enough to be willing to be apprentices and to go through a learning process with those who have already gone through it and are further along on the journey. But most egos are not willing to do that. They will not surrender to anyone, even as an interim mode to gain their own autonomy and sovereignty. And you have to go through that. You know, if you want a black belt in a martial art, you got to start studying with a white belt and then a green and whatever else they give you in your dojo. But you've got to apprentice to those who already have the ninth dan black belts, because otherwise you're not going to get there. And you'll always be a loser. But this is the problem. And many people come to this ashram, and I've had it happen recently several times, and they said, I feel called to be a teacher. Not I feel called to be a student and to learn to be a teacher, but I without knowing anything and without I want a certificate. I want to come for a week and leave here, with the authority to start my own religion and take people and guide them to the real. Well, okay, if they can do that, fine, then they don't need my help at all. But you're not going to do it in a few days. It takes a lot of inner work to overcome the ego's blind spots and proclivities and false beliefs and all of the obstacles that one doesn't even know will appear at the different assemblage points. And so without that clear understanding and humility, the arrogance of the ego, which doesn't want to leave its Peter Pan state anyway, is going to overcome the upper death drive that wants to grow and kill the ego and be reborn as pure spirit.
Thank you. I think it's a really interesting point. I often have the thought process, it's not like you have to surrender and take feedback from everyone. You choose one figure in your life and just face all of those issues of rapport and resistance and trust and process it with one person. I appreciate very much the opportunity to do that, but it doesn't need to turn into like everyone's just going to tell me what to do. That's a lack of discernment as well. That's with your guide kind of
thing. Yeah, then you're in chaos.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the teaching is to find the answers within. But first get them corroborated to make sure you're not being deceived by your own ego. And then when you can discern between those two and you've eliminated the tendency of self-deception, then you don't need a teacher anymore. But that getting past the ego's desire to hold you down and make you believe you're already a teacher and you're the Messiah and you're Jesus reborn and all of that, that's psychosis, but that's the state that people are in because they don't have within the ego any longer any desire to learn and to grow and to become truly divinized. And the divine nature is who we are, and we have that as our birthright. But most have sold their birthright in order to have, a certificate from a weekend as a Reiki master or something, and they're going to settle for a false kind of authority or power rather than go for the real.
Thank you. Really helpful.
Thank you. It's a very important question. We still have some time. If there are any others, please feel free.
Namaste. My question has to do with a recent teaching. I don't remember which one it was exactly, and you've mentioned this many times, but it just struck me very strongly this particular time, because I find that it might be one of the main challenges I'm facing, and it has to do with the externalizing. You said, I don't know if exactly in these words, but you were mentioning that the ego has a tendency to always want to externalize. And I would love to hear a little more about that, because I find that I get, and you talked about distraction in the same one. And when one is, I find, on the path for a certain time, you start eliminating, like you said, some obstacles that you see or some fixations or interests that you thought were fulfilling your life until you see that it was, something you inherited maybe from your family system or from society, the media, etc. And yet there's still a tendency sometimes to externalize and to be easily distracted in ways that I can't even explain to myself until I suddenly see, oh my gosh, it happened again. What causes this, and what would you recommend to do when, how can one catch these tendencies to externalize? Why do they happen, and what is the, behind all this, and how to deal with them?
Okay, well, again, a very good question and a universal one. The ego is born in duality, right? The ego is born within the body of a mother. And then when it comes out of that body, it's totally dependent on that mother, right? And it needs to breastfeed, and it needs to be gradually weaned, but taken care of totally. It's helpless completely and totally dependent on the other. So its attention is externalized. Where is mommy, And it's always looking and making sure that it's not abandoned, because the fear of abandonment is deeply embedded in the ego's psychic economy. And therefore, the tendency to externalize and look outside for what you need is probably the basic sanskara of the ego, right? It always wants to know the desire of the other, right? And it wants to be the object of the other's desire, so it knows it'll be taken care of, right? The baby wants to be sure mommy loves me and will be there for me, and You know, I have nothing to worry about. Everything is taken care of, right? And it needs to have that feeling for a fairly long time in infancy, and then it has to be weaned from that gradually in order to become independent and separate and, right, go through its own individuation process. But the tendency to externalize is still to hold on to what does the other think? What's in the media now? What are they saying? What are the styles? What are the foods they're eating? What are the whatevers, right? Because I want to fit in and I want to, right? So all of that is inherent to the ego because it is born in a context of needing the other's approval, right? And so one wants to have something then that one gets from the external world that one can then offer to the other as well, right? So there's a currency and an exchange. Okay, I know the other wants this, I will make that for them and they will then give me this, right? So that's how economies, you know, get set up in tribes and cultures, etc. So one has to get to the point where one realizes that one's true nature, before one was born and identified with a body that was dependent on the other, that caused the mind to split into concern for the other more than for itself, because it needs the other to sustain itself. Before that, consciousness was not subjective and it was not objective, right? It was not a subject, it was presence. But without subjectivity, without a sense of interiority, nor was there any sense of exteriority, right? Because the world is a dream field and you are the dreamer of it, you're not really in it and you're not really out of it, right? There is a sense of you're the nowhere man and you are no thing, literally. And yet you are all. But that all is not external because the dream is your own mind, right? Your own consciousness. Nothing is outside of consciousness. So when you return to that non-duality, then you see the whole world as a projection of events that have meanings that are there simply to enable you to realize the intention of the God Self in bringing this manifestation about. And there's an automatic flow with that will of God that is now manifesting through the world, but not with any sense of I and the other or needing to get anything from the world. Because there really is no world. The world is the God Self, and nothing else exists. So then that's the only way to defeat that tendency. You have to defeat the sense that there is an internal and an external.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I find that maybe the follow-up question would be, why is there this tendency constantly of distraction? So you answered maybe externalization, but the distraction of, oh, let me just look at this mm-hmm. quickly, and then suddenly you just go into the rabbit hole. Or sure. What is that? What is it that one is escaping by doing that? Is it just
you're escaping yourself? You're running away from yourself.
But is it yourself, little self?
No,
and the
you're running away from the self.
The self. Mm-hmm.
That's what the ego does. That's its job, is to distract you mm-hmm. from realizing who you are. Because the moment you realize who you are, the ego is dead meat. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It will have fulfilled its function. It's the larval state of consciousness. And once you are undistracted, your wings spread and you become the butterfly, and it disappears, right? All that the ego is a constant distraction from the real self.
Mm-hmm. So how does one, let's say, if one catches that happening again, how does one stop it?
Only through silencing the mind, because it's thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And affects that are the distractions.
Yeah, I find sometimes there's even convincing, no, but you need to know that because you will make better decisions,
right,
if you know that. It's ridiculous.
That's the self-deception of the ego. That's exactly how it works. Mm-hmm. And as long as it can convince you, then it's got you under its control.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
So the only way out of it is to realize there is no I. The I thought itself is false. So how can I need anything from outside when there's no I that could need anything at all? And I'm complete and full and blissful already. How could I believe that? And it becomes a joke. Mm-hmm. And then it's completely silenced.
Thank you. I like the comedy part of it.
Thank you. Also, very good question. We had a lot of important questions tonight. I appreciate that. Namaste.
My question is about forgiveness, self-forgiveness.
Mm.
Is the ego capable of self-forgiveness, or does that come from your soul?
Yes, that's a soul. And the only way that your soul can achieve that is to realize that everything that happened had to happen, okay? And everything is actually perfect. But like Yogiraj was saying about mistakes, what you have to forgive yourself for are what you think are mistakes and errors that may have defiled you or harmed others or whatever, right? But when you recognize that your soul can't be defiled or harmed and is eternal, then what you are to learn from those errors is how to help others avoid them and forgive themselves for it, right? And so by doing that, you become a model, and your energy of forgiveness then spreads through the morphic field, and everyone feels it, and it makes it easier for everyone else to be in a state of self-forgiveness, as well as forgiveness of the other, because they often externalize and blame the other for their problems. So you have to have forgiveness of both, the self and the other, and then you transcend that duality. But the forgiveness is a giving forth. That's what the word means, right? It's a giving forth of love. And love forgives. Love is compassion and acceptance and a complete unconditional unification and no sense of you should suffer, you were bad, right? All of that sense of guilt and shame and all of that. That's the ego's way of controlling you. So the forgiveness has to be so thorough and deep that there's no tendency to feel guilty about anything, but also no tendency to psychopathically do things that would harm people and not feel guilty about it, but to surrender to the source of the goodness and the life and the light and the love that you are able to then transmit. And the source of that love will always act through you in a benign, benevolent, and beautiful way. And by trusting that and surrendering to that, you will spontaneously live a blessed life.
So you must be able to forgive yourself before you can forgive others, correct?
Yes. But again, it's the soul that forgives. And it's a forgiveness in silence. And the forgiveness takes the form of silencing the mind that would accuse itself, right? And getting rid of that self-judgment that may also be a judgment of others. So that whole desire to judge and be judged, that tendency is the source of all that is evil and demonic in the world and has caused people to be in a state of suffering and hell realms of agony. And they commit suicide because they can't escape that horror any other way. So by forgiving and letting love fill you at every level, then there is a peace and serenity and fulfillment that then shines. And literally people will see your aura glowing with the light of divine love. And then you will become an angel who is here only on service without any other desires. And that divinization will then have the most beautiful outcomes in the world.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Namaste. Thank you for this class. Speaking about distractions, I wanted to ask you about the patterns of overwhelm going into frustration. And I was wondering, does that stem from also the helpless infant, or how, when I get into that pattern, what are some ways to free myself from?
What triggers the sense of overwhelm?
Just not being able to, I think, succeed or not get it.
Uh-huh. So it's a fear that you won't be able to get it or succeed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a fear. And the fear creates a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm.
What you fear, your ego will create. It will sabotage you. And your fear is what gives it the permission to do that. Right? Because fear weakens you. You lose your self-possession.
Yes.
And you become possessed by that negative belief, which then acts out and creates it. And then you say, see, I knew I would not be able to, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't allow it to come in, because that is how you get defeated by the dark side of the ego. That's the shadow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that come in the first place? Because indeed you weren't given enough love that was unconditional, and you took that in as, oh, I must be a failure as a child, because otherwise they would love me and give me more attention. And since they didn't, I must not be good enough. And therefore, I'm a failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
I failed to, let's say, keep my parents in a loving relationship. They split up. It's my fault, right? Mm-hmm. If I was enough, they would have stayed together. Or whatever was the trauma. The infantile ego always assumes that it is the one that has caused the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other, the dark side of egocentricity, you see, a narcissism. And it takes on the blame for the mother's anxiety or the father's not being there or whatever the situation was. And then it accumulates guilt and blame until it feels like it's inevitable. It's going to happen again. I've got a cloud over my head and, you know, everything will go wrong for me. And that belief, even if it's at a subconscious level, is going to erupt at crucial moments and create performance anxiety and a sense of overwhelm in all kinds of situations that are not actually overwhelming, but the fear makes it so, not the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to recognize that the fear is based on a delusion that you took in and believed before you were old enough to have a mature judgment of what really caused the family system to be dysfunctional, and it wasn't your birth into
mm-hmm.
it, okay? So
okay.
It's very important that you get that.
Yes.
And then you'll be able to eliminate the overwhelm, and you'll overwhelm it with that divine confidence and love and power and beauty that is your true nature.
Thank you. That helps a lot. And just going on that, the whole scenario, the anger that comes up is more geared towards the anger towards oneself that has fallen into that trap of going, that blaming itself, or is it anger of the parent, anger for
it
the
was
parents?
Anger at the parents originally, uh-huh. But it wasn't safe to be angry at them,
uh-huh.
Right? Because then they really would have abandoned you and punished you more, right? You can't scream at your parents usually and get away with it. So you internalize the anger at yourself, and you found that by making mistakes, getting sick, failing at things, you got more attention that way than you did when you succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and so there became a secondary gain in failing, because then mommy would come and say, "Oh, don't, you know, poor thing," etc. And so the identity as a poor thing became the only way you would get the love that you were missing. And so that became a technique that the ego used, and then it became autonomous, and you became subject to its tendencies,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now don't allow those tendencies to arise and see them for what they are, and you will eliminate them, and then your natural power and joy will overtake any of those fears.
Thank you. So the anger, though, I feel though it directs to myself in a way, or is that just a distraction that it's...
You're angry for being overwhelmed, right?
Uh-huh.
And for feeling you're not good enough. But that anger came from others who made you feel that way.
Okay.
So you see, originally, the mother and I are one.
Mm-hmm.
And so your anger at her is your anger at yourself. They're not really separated yet. And then when they become two, the anger is at both, but primarily at yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, we have a few minutes left if there's one more question. Okay, we've reached the zero point. And I hope this has been useful for everyone, whether you've asked a question or not, and has helped you recognize the difference between soul consciousness and ego consciousness, because it is, everything depends on the recognition of that difference. And the ego is always in a state of duality, and in a state of antagonism, either at the other or at itself, and is always disloyal to itself, its own nature, and is always in a state of feeling at a deep level like an imposter. Because it has to create a facade. It has to create an identity that can fit into the social order and adapt. And that identity in the beginning was fictional, and it remains fictional, even though it becomes more sophisticated. But one's identity, one learns, depends on one's clothes, one's style of speech, one's knowledge of certain websites and certain books and certain movies, one's degrees, diplomas, and whatever else represents a certain kind of status and prestige, one's money, one's ability to have connections and control, etc. But all of that is a false persona. And as long as one is identified with that persona, the soul's true nature cannot break through. And so it really has to be put down. That's why ego death is the portal to the rebirth as your real self. And the willingness to live in the naked truth of who you are. But who you are is no one and no thing. And it's that emptiness of needing to have an identity that enables you to recognize the truth of the oneness of all that is, and not separate everyone into different kinds of beings who are worthy or unworthy or have this or that differentiations. When you realize the soul and the God self as what you are, differences fade away, and the underlying sameness of our nature and our being and our energy and our essence become what is foregrounded. And the differences are just part of the background of the dance that's taking place in the dream field. But it has no real significance. Everything that matters and is important is the presence of the unification of consciousness in the God self that is then united with all that is and has therefore no fear and no desire and lives in a state of freedom. So may you give yourself that gift and free yourself from all suffering, because that is what we are being granted through the grace of God, and all we need to do is accept the gift.